Previously on the seventh day.
In December of 1831, the HMS Beagle set sail from England on a five-year round-the-world voyage. Aboard this survey ship, as an unpaid naturalist, was 22-year-old Charles Darwin. Darwin's observations and conclusions would revolutionize the conventional view of origins.
Some super-calculating intellect must have designed the properties of the carbon atom. Otherwise, the chance of my finding such an atom through the blind forces of nature would be utterly minuscule. A common-sense interpretation of the facts suggests that a super-intellect has monkeyed with physics as well as with chemistry and biology.
Perhaps some of us have been too quick to discard this old book as an irrelevant collection of useless fables and legends, traditions.
But instead, God created a context in which everything that has been created, the natural world, the material world, and life itself, can really be appreciated and enjoyed and celebrated.
He warned the people that their city was to be destroyed, their temple destroyed, and that they would be carried away to Babylon to serve the king of Babylon 70 years. Nobody listened.
And they burnt them as they were in the caves, because they were not willing to break in upon the honor they owed the Sabbath, even in such distresses. And now, part three of the seventh day, revelations from the lost pages of history. In the time when Jesus Christ walked among the Jews, it was his custom to attend the synagogue to worship and teach on the Sabbath day. And the eyes of the religious leaders were continually upon him. Some of the rabbis of his day argued with him over the proper way to observe the Sabbath. They waited to see if he would heal people on the holy day, so they might accuse him of breaking the Sabbath.
Thank you.
What Jesus Christ did on that Sabbath 2,000 years ago was revolutionary indeed. By healing on that day, he won the hearts of the common people. This placed him in direct conflict with the Jewish leaders. By claiming himself to be the Lord of the Sabbath, he challenged their spiritual authority, a challenge that eventually led to his infamous trial and death on the cross. Jesus was born in Bethlehem, an insignificant town in the region of Judea, during the reign of Caesar Augustus, the first great Roman emperor. At that time, the Roman Empire held within its borders scores, if not hundreds, of religions and cults. From Zoroastrianism in Persia to the mystery cults of Greece to the Druidism of Celtic Britain. Secret initiations and fertility rites were common, and so was belief in astrology. The Romans themselves admired the religion and culture of Greece. They adopted Greek gods and blended them into their own religions. The result was a mixture of ancestor worship, emperor worship, and sun worship, a religion that included not one god, but many. The Jews, on the other hand, worshipped only one god. Though surrounded by the images of Greek and Roman deities, they served a god they couldn't see. They had no icons or images to represent him. They had no initiations or fertility rites. Instead, they had a day that set them apart, a day without equal in any other religion, a 24-hour period devoted completely to their God. The Jews had the Sabbath.
After the Exodus from Egypt, God made a covenant with Israel. And part of that covenant included the Ten Commandments with the commandment to keep the Sabbath, the seventh day of the week, as a memorial of his creation and of his redemption from Egypt. By keeping that Sabbath, which was a sign between God and Israel, they were reminded that he was their God and they were his people.
You shall surely observe my Sabbaths. For this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you.
It's safe to assume that the Jews of the first century knew and read the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments told them, just as it tells us, that the Sabbath is a memorial to God's creation of the world in 6 days, and also is a memorial to the Exodus from Egypt.
For Jews of the first century, the Sabbath was a time of intense spirituality. They related to God who created the universe in 6 days and rested on the seventh, so they too rested on the seventh. As well, in Jewish liturgy, they reflected on the fact that God took them out of Egypt, so the Sabbath became for them a celebration of their freedom.
Observance of the seventh-day Sabbath was the unmistakable mark of a Jew. It set him apart from everyone else. It couldn't be hidden.
In the eyes of Greek and Roman observers, the Jewish observance of the Sabbath was one of the peculiarities of the Jews. Here is a people that does not work every seventh day, and the Greeks and Romans had nothing comparable to this.
First century Jews took advantage of the Sabbath in that they couldn't work and instead rejoiced. They would have a wonderful candlelit dinner on Friday night, often with 2 loaves of bread to commemorate the manna that fell in the desert in the biblical period. They would, on Saturday, probably attend the synagogue where they had the opportunity to see and perhaps gossip with their friends. And from the evidence that we have, they studied the Torah and worshiped together.
Outside observers are repeatedly struck by the oddity of the Jewish refusal to do work on the Sabbath day. One philosopher, Seneca, even says that the Jews devote 1/7 of their life to idleness, because they don't work on the Sabbath day.
To remain idle every seventh day is to lose a seventh part of life, while many present interests suffer by this idleness.
When Jesus arrived on the scene, the Sabbath was being crushed under the weight of arbitrary rules and regulations. The rabbis had turned Sabbath keeping into a meticulous science, devoid of meaning and joy.
In the first century, Sabbath observance was a series of don'ts.
They forbade the tying or untying of a knot.
Cooking.
Writing more than one letter of the alphabet. The carrying of any burden, including something you might put in your pocket.
And a lot of the day-to-day kind of work, like preparing skins and hides and the things that you would need for subsistence.
They forbade the kindling of a fire or the extinguishing of a fire. And they forbade travel of more than 2,000 cubits beyond your dwelling place. 2,000 cubits would be about 4,000 feet.
The Jewish way of Sabbath keeping was very legalistic. You couldn't move, you couldn't do anything. But Jesus saw that that was a distortion of God's plan for humanity.
By healing the man with the withered hand, Jesus showed the true spirit of the Sabbath. He rejected the rabbi's rules. He kept the Sabbath as taught in the ancient Hebrew scriptures.
According to the Gospel of Luke, it was Jesus' custom to go into the synagogue and worship on the Sabbath day. He did keep the Sabbath, but he did not keep it according to the rules laid down by the Pharisees. In fact, he said, the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. Whereas the Pharisees had said that the Sabbath was made only for Israel, and in fact, Israel was made for the Sabbath so that the Lord would have someone on earth to keep the Sabbath.
When Jesus declared that the Sabbath was made for man, he was teaching a radical, disturbing concept. No wonder he provoked such strong opposition from the Jewish leaders.
On another Sabbath, Jesus was teaching the people. And there was a woman who had been ill and bent over for 18 years. And he called her to him. Religious leaders were angry with Jesus for healing on the Sabbath, and they continued to conspire against him.
To the religious leaders, this was scandalous behavior, particularly because it broke their mortal danger rule. The mortal danger rule said that there were some things you could do on the Sabbath only in life or death cases. You could save someone whose life was in danger, but you could not heal a chronically ill person on the Sabbath. That would have to wait for another day.
But Jesus didn't want to wait another day. He was saying basically, you untie your animal so that your animal can rest on the Sabbath, but you are criticizing me for loosing this woman from her burden so that she can truly keep Sabbath for the first time in many, many years. It was a devastating argument.
St. John, in his record of the life of Jesus, reports that for this reason the Jews were persecuting Jesus because he was doing these things on the Sabbath.
They accused Jesus of breaking the Sabbath. And they were afraid that the people would follow Jesus, the nation would become a nation of Sabbath breakers, and this would incur the judgments and the wrath of God, and they would lose their nation. And it was this fear that led to the crucifixion of Christ.
Some have suggested that the Sabbath of the Ten Commandments lost its significance with the life and death of Jesus, that somehow he did away with the Sabbath.
When he said the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath, he could have said the Sabbath was given to Israel and is no longer necessary for people other than Israelites to keep, and maybe not even Israelites. He had all kinds of opportunities to say, the Sabbath isn't important, let's get rid of the Sabbath. But instead, all the controversies that he had with the Pharisees were not about whether the Sabbath should be kept, but how it should be kept.
If ever there was a question about how to keep the Sabbath, Jesus gave the answer. The answer was the authority of the sacred scriptures, not following the human laws and traditions. The human had so encrusted the Sabbath, you could hardly see the real thing. Jesus cut through that to the heart of the Sabbath, which is a relationship between a loving creator and people.
And so Sabbath, away from the secular activities, could be a day of action and day of concern for your fellow beings, a day for fellowship, a day to spend more time with God, your family, your neighbors, your friends.
Many devout Christians are surprised to learn that their own weekly day of worship is based on church rules and traditions, and not on the sacred scriptures. Some believe the Bible teaches that Jesus purposely violated the seventh-day Sabbath in order to make way for a new Christian day of worship.
This idea lacks both biblical and historical support. Jesus didn't break the Sabbath of the Ten Commandments. What he did was to defy human customs and traditions, and by doing that, he showed what the biblical Sabbath keeping, the true Sabbath keeping, really was.
Jesus Christ broke the Sabbath free, free from the traditions that had made it a rigid formality. And he restored its true purpose as a celebration of man's relationship with his fellow man and with his Creator.
When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. But pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day.
With those words, Jesus pointed to a frightening prediction from the Old Testament prophet Daniel. But why would he tell the people to pray that they wouldn't have to escape on the Sabbath, unless he expected them to still be keeping the Sabbath holy?
In the Roman Empire in the year 66, Rome was quite unstable. That's called the year of the four emperors, and the first three did not die of natural causes. So the Jews, an eastern province of the Roman Empire, thought that this was actually a good time to take advantage of Roman instability to press forward for their own freedom from Roman oppression.
The Roman general Vespasian marched against the city in an attempt to quell the uprising. Before the job was done, he became emperor in 69 AD. And his son Titus, another future emperor, took over as general of the army. Titus laid siege to the city, and finally in 70 AD, the Roman army broke through the defenses, ravaged the city, and completely destroyed the temple. An early church historian reports that the Christians of Jerusalem remembered the warning of Jesus and escaped before the city fell to the Romans.
All who believed in Christ left Jerusalem and removed to Pella and other places beyond the River Jordan, so that they all marvelously escaped the general shipwreck of their country. And we do not read anywhere that so much as one of them perished in the destruction of Jerusalem. Of such signal service was this caution of our Savior to the believers.
This story is an obvious intersection of history and prophecy. We know the dates and places, and Jesus predicted and knew when these things would take place, that 40 years after his death and resurrection, his followers would still be keeping the Sabbath.
In fact, throughout the New Testament period, and that takes us to the end of the first century AD, Christians continued to observe the seventh-day Sabbath. That's clear from both the biblical and historical records.
The early Christians saw the relation to Judaism not as a kind of a discontinuity, but as a progression. In fact, their religion was the fulfillment of all the hopes and expectations of the Old Testament.
Christians did not see themselves as a new religion. They believed that they were Jews. They were the true Israel. They were the children of Abraham. If they were Gentiles, they were the children of Abraham by faith.
One thing that Jews and Christians shared was an idea that God acts in history, that he acted at Sinai, at the Exodus, at creation. And the record of those actions is in the Hebrew Scriptures.
The belief in the one God, a personal God, a loving creator in relationship with his creatures, this was at the heart of both Jewish and Christian theology. It was also at the heart of the experience of Sabbath keeping for them as a relationship with a loving creator. But for Christians, the life and death of Christ added a new dimension, a new reason for Sabbath keeping.
So then, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God.
With those words, St. Paul showed that Christian faith took the Sabbath to new heights. With the death and resurrection of Jesus, Christians had a new hope, a hope of deliverance from a world of sin. And the Sabbath, originally the memorial of creation, now also commemorated salvation and the spiritual peace that it brings.
For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from his own work, just as God did from his.
This brings us to an intriguing question. If the first century Christians observed the Sabbath of the Old Testament, the seventh-day Sabbath of creation and the fourth commandment, why do most Christians today observe Sunday? When did the change from Saturday to Sunday take place? Does the biblical record provide any clue? The first four books of the New Testament are among the oldest Christian documents. St. Mark wrote his book first, a report on the life of Christ. That was 55 AD or later. The writings of Saints Matthew and Luke probably date to sometime between the late 60s and AD 80. St. John, the last surviving original disciple of Christ, wrote his book near the end of the first century. Despite their late dates, from 30 to 70 years after the death of Christ, these books contain not even the slightest hint that Jesus himself or his disciples considered changing the day of rest and worship from the seventh day of the week to the first.
It's especially significant that New Testament writers never refer to the first day of the week as a Sabbath. To them, the seventh day was the Sabbath. And this is consistent with all of the other evidence that to the end of the first century, Christians were worshiping with Jews in the synagogue on the Sabbath.
Next time on the seventh day.
May the apostates have no hope. May the dominion of wickedness be speedily uprooted in our day. May the Nazarenes and the heretics quickly perish and not be inscribed together with the righteous.
The Jews in the region of Cyrene had put a certain Andreas at their head and were destroying both the Romans and the Greeks.
Imperial forces finally crushed the rebellion in 135. Hadrian banned Jews from Jerusalem and prohibited Sabbath keeping and other Jewish rites of religion.
Jews were the enemy. Christians didn't want to be associated with the Jews and thought of as the enemy. And the easy way to disassociate themselves was to renounce the Sabbath, which was a mark of Jewishness.
We hear about Roman soldiers having come back from the east who pray at dawn, facing the east, facing the sun.
Sympathetic biographers claim that before a climactic battle near Rome, Constantine saw a vision of a flaming cross in the sky. he credited this vision with his subsequent victory and declared himself to be a Christian.
For although almost all churches throughout the world celebrate the sacred mysteries on the Sabbath of every week, yet the Christians of Alexandria and at Rome, on account of some ancient tradition, have ceased to do this.